So what we are trying to do is to, you know, to sort of create some sort of mapping between the characteristics of humans, the characteristics of dogs, and look at how the principles need to translate in from one to the other. You know, starting from the, you know, sensory apparatus, going on to the cognitive apparatus, for example. Well, I told you about the colors, but for example, we humans tend to categorize things based on shape, because again, we abstract. You tend to abstract more. Whereas dogs tend to categorize things based on size, because if it's small, I can eat it. If it's big, I probably need to run away. So that's, you know, we have to take these things into account when we think of, you know, helping them to distinguish, discriminate between things. And of course, you know, we have different bodies and we interact with things in different ways. And all of these, of course, conditions our behavior and our preferences. So these are two sets of controls which we designed for the Royal Society Summer Science Exhibition in 2014. We got people. So this is a typical set of, you know, switches and controls and things that you find in any home, and this is the canine version of the same controls. So we got at the exhibition, we got people to wear big boxing gloves, and we gave them constraints also about how they could move, and also we got them to wear these sort of these glasses that imitate color blindness, sort of the lack of the third cone, no, not color blindness. And we asked people to use these and see how they felt, and then we asked them to use these. And of course, they had no problem using these, but they had problems using those. So this was to give people an idea, to give them, you know, the experience of, well, a small sense of the experience that a dog might have. Now, what's different about this? Well, you know, first of all, it's really very simple. We use yellow and blue because dogs can discriminate very well between them. We use different sizes for different functions. These were operating lights, which are just above them, and these were opening a door. The fact that these are away from the door, you know, you think the handle has to be on the door, is always, but of course, a dog, if he tries to open that, the door will open in his face. So if the control is here, the dog can be away from the door. These are quite soft, they're sort of sensitive to the touch, so the dogs can operate them with their nose, which is what they would, you know, do by preference. Or if they need to jump, you know, if they need to jump up to, you know, to operate them with their paws, wherever they touch them, the things works. So they don't have to target a very small object for which they don't have the precision in their limbs. So this is a visitor to the exhibition with his human, and he was able to operate the switch with no training previously. No, you know, he had never seen these. The human directed him to use it, and he switched the light on with no problem at the first try. And that just goes to show what, you know, a simple attention to doing things for the user can achieve. So this is, we have now installed some of these controls in one of our buildings in our campus, because there is a lady with her dog, her assistant dog, and they couldn't access the building before. They were struggling to access the building. Now they can, because Tori, the dog, has the right controls to get in. Now, one question that I'm really interested in is to see in time whether people start using, humans start using the dog controls in concurrently with the human controls, or instead of, or what they do. And attached to this, for me, a question that is interesting to me is, if we start thinking outside the human box, How does thinking about designing for accessibility for dogs or for other animals in general, what does it tell us about accessibility for humans, you know, and vice versa? So can we take a multi-species approach to, you know, to thinking about accessibility? So it doesn't really matter. One of the things that I hope you can take away from this chat is that, for me, I feel very passionate about the fact we should not, species doesn't matter, like gender doesn't matter, like age doesn't matter, like any, you know, it doesn't matter what category we fall into. What counts is what the characteristics that we have and the preferences that we have, and that's what we should orient the design process. So now, here is another project that I want to tell you about, and it is in collaboration with a different charity. The charity is called Medical Detection Dogs, and they train dogs to do various kinds of biodetection. So this particular project is a PhD of Charlotte Robinson, and it was to help sort of to support the work of diabetes alert dogs. So medical detection dogs, the charity trains diabetes alert dogs to detect when people who suffer from diabetes or other conditions, but let's use the example of diabetes at the moment for now, when they are about to have a hypoglycemic attack. The dog can smell it in the blood, can smell it from sweat or breath, and can alert the person. The person can then take sugar or whatever other remedial action. They can test their blood and, you know, take appropriate action to prevent falling into a hypoglycemic coma. So that works very well, and people who were constantly hospitalized because we're having hypoglycemic attacks suddenly are, you know, very rarely hospitalized after being paired with the dogs. But in some cases, the condition of the person is so brittle that the dog does alert the person, but the person has no time to respond because the onset of the attack is too fast, is too quick. So what happens at that point, if the person passes out and the dog is alone with the person, there is nothing more the dog can do. And this is obviously dangerous for the human, but it's also very stressful for the dog. And these were different trigger mechanisms. So this was like a magnet, this was another sort of thing. So to see whether the dog preferred to the thing to detach completely or just to pull it and for it to go back in place and so on. So that's, this is where now, let's see if the video works. And this is just one of the training, sort of, one of the, I've got a few videos to show you, the training sessions, the sessions to figure out what the dog's preferences might be. So the person is pretending to collapse. And there is a trainer over there, and she's trying to entice the dog to go and pull the thing. This is a very, very rough stage still.
Good boy.
So we very quickly figured out that if the thing didn't come off, the dog would break the whole thing because he just wanted to come off, for it to come off. And that was like a very clear cut signal to the dog that the job was done. So now you have seen the person has collapsed here, the dog is gone there. Now in the next video, things go slightly different. The trainer said, go slightly further away. She goes. So just for a moment, notice what the dog has in his mouth. And so the trainer is calling, Simba, Simba, come to the... And he was just... So he's quite confused. And then he sits down in between the lady and the line of sight of the lady and the alarm. He starts to yawn, which is a sign of stress. So what now, I tell you what the conclusion that they made.